Hello, Gregor.
Yes, sir.
Take two.
Take two. This is it. This is going to work.
All right. Speaking of work, I love your work. We got to spend a lot of time talking about it last time. And then
it went.
There's a reason that I'm the guy talking and not programming this stuff. Thanks for joining.
Thank you.
Let's tell people who you are and what you do. And then I've got some very hopefully inspired questions.
Sounds good. My name is Gregor Turk. I'm a visual artist and sculptor here in Atlanta.
And you have a exhibit or it's not, what is it?
I would call it, it's a temporary public art installation.
An installation.
It was sponsored by Atlanta Celebrates Photography for their 2013 project, but it's lasted into 2014. And so it's called Apparitions, and it was a three-part exhibition of five inwardly facing billboards that are bisected by the Beltline just adjacent to Piedmont Park. So it's in the section of the Beltline that has not been paved yet.
And the Beltline, for those who may not know, who may not be in Atlanta or aren't reading, you know, the New York Times and things like that, is an abandoned rail, 22-mile loop through the inside perimeter of Atlanta that connects 45 different neighborhoods. And in this particular section, it has yet to be paved, will be, but people can still explore it and therefore get to see your work.
That's right. Only about 2.25 miles has been paved, the East Side Trail. So this is just north of that, north of Monroe Drive. And so the first part of the installation were a set of photographs of blank billboards. I've been photographing blank billboards around the country for a couple of decades. And so that was the first set of images that were up. And so it was to stimulate conversation and maybe some curiosity as to what's going on. Why are billboards on the Beltline? I mean, this is supposed to be a pedestrian corridor. This is public space. Why is there advertising? Well, there wasn't advertising. It was a public art installation, but that was the idea, was to get a conversation going. And since then, there's actually been a number of signage issues that have been happening, especially on the paved section of the Beltline.
Was that intentional to start that dialogue?
Absolutely, yeah. Because I mean, it's been my concern, and I know those with the Beltline, they've had one billboard taken down that was adjacent to it. But if you think about all the new construction that's going on, I mean, just the advertising for that building of, hey, rent property here, or you know, buy property here, and then all the sort of sandwich board signs, which you know is understandable. For the restaurants that are close by, but what ultimately is it going to look like? Is it going to be a advertising free-for-all?
And is that your concern? I mean, look, I've got my own personal concerns with it, but what are yours? Like, what if there's a bunch of advertising out there?
Well, I think, you know, think back to the Olympics. We can kind of go two ways there. I mean, the Olympics are quite nice in that it's very restricted in terms of what can be advertised. I mean, if you look at the interior of the venues, I mean, granted, there were only so many corporate sponsors, but for the most part, it was relatively neutral. You get out of those venues, and it was just we were whoring ourselves, especially Atlanta. So that's sort of my fear. And, you know, it is a public space. It's a nice place to just get your exercise or walk and not be confronted with advertising. I mean, advertising serves a purpose, and, you know, corporate sponsorship and things like that.
Well, it's kind of interesting because, like, I'm thinking now, listening to you, about Pandora, and I pay extra to not have ads.
Right. And then, you know, a good example would be the private public partnership that took place for Millennium Park and for all the public art that was developed there. You know, it's Pritzker's, is it one of the banks? I mean, every plaza's got a name, but it's done with uniform signage. It's not done with, you know, their corporate colors and things like that. So it's pretty subdued. So it's something to really think about and have public input on before it's too late. Because, you know, speaking of Pandora, it's going to be more like the box, and, you know, it's out. So.
Yeah. So you put billboards to say you don't want billboards.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is, what I find interesting about blank billboards is that they essentially shout silence. They are landmarks of undesirable territory. You know, you're nowhere when you see a blank billboard. Madison Avenue has sort of turned its back, so to speak, on that area. Now, it may be just temporary or it may be longer term. And so some of the photographs that I've taken have been out west where, you know, it's a highway that doesn't get the traffic that it once did, so nobody wants to advertise. Every now and then you'll see a billboard, a blank billboard illuminated at night, which really, you know, so here's even extra energy going into saying nothing. So anyways, I have been interested in that and signage in general, but the blankness speaks to me. And the patina of that too, you know, it's not just, there's no such thing as a white billboard. It's layers and layers that have come through or what you can see from the last sign.
So you kind of start with this commentary about public space and advertising and kind of this notion of hoping to have a more out in nature, away from it all type of feeling. And the installation and exhibit develops to going from blank billboards to having images. And as they stand now, those images are of Sherman's eyes.
That's right. So there was actually one other phase in between. So the first phase was to look at advertising and the purpose that billboards traditionally serve. The second was to look at billboards as objects. And so I had photographed the site before I actually constructed the billboards. And so then I I had images made that fit to scale. If you were standing at a specific vantage point, basically the facade of the billboard wasn't seen because the legs were still there or the supports were still there, but the facade was actually the image of what the billboard was covering. And so it changed with the seasons.
So just for people who had not seen that, it almost like camouflage.
Yeah, and so they were there, not there, and I think that's how we see billboards. They've become so neutral to us. You know, you go somewhere like Vermont and you don't see billboards. You know, it's like, wow, you do notice the absence of them. So I just wanted to kind of look at billboards as both an object and as a conveyor of advertising. And then the third phase, as you were mentioning, was really looking at the psychological ramifications of billboards. And so I put five sets of Sherman's eyes, and it was 150 years ago this summer that Sherman came to town. And so I just took a couple of Matthew Brady photographs and a couple other photographs of General Sherman and put the eyes as large as I could get. So these eyes are there, and they were intended to have the public look back 150, you know, over the past 150 years. Are we a better place? Are we a different place, you know, since Sherman was here?
How did you come up with that idea?
That's a good question. How did he come up with any idea? It sort of happens. I don't know. But I wanted to have three aspects to that project, three phases.
I mean, were you like at the History Center and you saw this, or is it's in the news, or are you just like you're a Civil War buff, or it was a dream? Or
I'm certainly not a Civil War buff, but I certainly am a history. I have a strong interest in history and place. And so sort of that resonance of Sherman, you know, growing up here in Atlanta, especially in the 60s, you know, I don't really remember the centennial of the Olympics. I was 4 years old at that time. But I do remember sort of where Sherman ranked in things, you know, which was pretty low. And one story I vividly remember as a kid was having to stand up and sing Yankee Doodle Dandy when I think it was fourth grade. The teacher had asked where everybody was born. And in Atlanta, that means were you born in Piedmont or Northside or Crawford Long? But I didn't know to lie, which I've learned to tell not the truth, I guess. And I said that I was born in New Haven, Connecticut, which I was. I lived there for 3 days. My dad was finishing up a residency program, and then we moved back south. So
3 days?
3 days.
That's funny.
A Yankee by 3 days. But
I'll have to check with you know, the powers that be, but you might be able to kind of skate in.
I know, but when a person in authority asks you where were you born, you really, you know, it's on your passport. And it, as from that point on, well, the point of that story was that I had to stand up with one other person who was not born in the South and sing Yankee Doodle Dandy, and I did not know the lyrics. Everybody else got to sing Dixie. But what I did, my takeaway from that is that don't answer the question. I mean, I consider myself a native Atlantan. My father's family goes back several generations. My mom met my dad here in Atlanta. But it's funny because I was able to skirt around it for years until starting to have exhibitions in museums, and they put your birthplace. You know, they put your year and birthplace typically on the wall.
You've been out and you've seen people seeing Sherman watching them. What's the reaction that you're seeing?
Well, it's been interesting. I didn't state whose eyes those were on there at first. I let it go for a couple of weeks. And then I put signage up that indicated that it was Sherman's eyes. It was after that that I was going by one day and I noticed what appeared to be a bird had flown into the billboard. There was a big dent in it. And I just thought, oh, that's really strange. And then I looked down and saw a rather good-sized rock that had been heaved at Sherman. And then I noticed another rock that had been heaved at Sherman. And then a couple of weeks later, his eyes in one of the lower billboards got tagged with asterisk, gold asterisk in his eyes. But so that was that aspect. I can't say what the person or persons were thinking, but I have talked to a few other people.
Sorry, when that happens, when you're creating public art and something like that happens, is it infuriating or exciting to you?
Well, at least you've provoked. I mean, I'm not trying to agitate people. I'm trying to encourage them to have a conversation, or whether that's a conversation with themselves or dialogue with other people. You know, I'm for a certain level of alteration or intervention, as long as it's not destructive. And I was able to scrape off most of the gold paint, but it's clearly still there. The rocks, I don't know, I just sort of had to laugh at. I mean, it must have been a sight to see somebody actually heaving rocks at Sherman. But anyway, so the other, I was talking to somebody else, and they didn't know that I had put up the eyes. And I said, did you see that piece? And they said, oh, yeah, my girlfriend was riding her bike by, and she said she totally figured it out. I said, well, how's that? She said, oh, yeah, she's been on the tube in London, and you'll see a pair of eyes every now and then, and it's to encourage people to you know, be mindful that they're being watched, whether it's by a video camera or what. So I guess it's kind of like Big Brother. And so she said that, oh, yeah, this must have been a dangerous area, that they were trying to keep people from doing bad things there. I just had to laugh.
Well, there's so much there with the potential metaphors and meanings. And I guess what you would hope for is happening. People are having conversations, even if it's not exactly what you intended.
Yeah, and I mean, it does have its creepy aspect, but then it does have, I've been there with people. I was cleaning the one of the billboards, and somebody just made the comment of keeping the good general in tip-top shape or something like that. So he knew who he was and just sort of made a comment, you know, sort of tongue-in-cheek, I guess. I was doing some other maintenance at one point. I was on a ladder behind one of the pieces that sits up out of view. Just my head was above it, and some people were walking by, and then they looked, you know, they started looking around as they saw these eyes looking at them. And then they saw me with my head sticking out, and I felt it was a little creepy, but anyways, we just laughed and smiled at each other.
One thing that I think is really nice about this story is that Atlanta Celebrates Photography commissioned this. And that name is not empty. I mean, they celebrate Atlanta. And I'd love to hear your personal experience with them on this project and others.
Yeah, so the mandate for that is that it has to be, they've been doing public art pieces now for 10 years. Primary medium has to be photo-based, and it can be video, it can be still images or whatnot. Yeah, Atlanta Celebrates Photography has done a phenomenal job with diverse projects, and working with Amy Miller on this project was a real delight. Trying to determine the site, working with the Beltline, and how to come up with the space. And so it was a little bit of risk-taking in that it's on a relatively desolate area of the Beltline. I mean, it's just within the last year, though, it is really filled in. There's a lot more traffic along that section of the Beltline. So I think what's been great about using that site is that people actually experience the artwork. It's not a drive-by. So much public art in the city is there close to where a car, you know, goes by, and it's just an object that's blurred. But this is one where you are surrounded. You don't have to step out of the way and watch for cars. You may have to watch for a passing bike, but...
Yeah. Well, and they just do such a great job. I mean, you're a very well-known artist, but there are others who are part of even Art on the Beltline that Atlanta Celebrates Photography has helped put on that are sharing Instagram photos. Or, like, I remember a great campaign they had, I don't know, years ago, where they did wheat paste on abandoned buildings.
Yeah, that was Matt Hafner's project years ago. And then they did, you know, they'll completely change gears and they'll do placemats that are photographs. So it's just sort of random. You might be in a restaurant and these placemats show up.
When you were here last time, during our dry run, apparently.
The tapes that got censored.
It was just too provocative, Gregor. No, you told a story that I'm just going to have to ask you to repeat because I loved it so much. We were talking about your piece helping to delineate between male and female restrooms and how that manifested itself at a dinner party that you had.
Yeah, I was working on a commission for the Jacksonville Airport. I had commissioned, I think, four artists to do pairs of restrooms. And so I had been making rubbings for years of the pictograms that you see when you enter a restroom, of either a man or a woman. And so when I've traveled, I make rubbings of different things, words, just anything that's got a slight raised image to it. When I was working on this project, it just sort of dawned on me to put it on dinner plates. And so I did the same stencil that I was using for the tiles that I was creating, and then had a dinner party for 10 people. And so female plates went for where they women were supposed to sit, and male plates were men were supposed to sit. And so you just had to find your spot. But what was interesting is that with the pictograms, some are well designed and some are not so well designed. I think the ones that I have from Barcelona and Paris are very svelte and very sophisticated, and then one from Prague from the old days, it was sort of Eastern Bloc sensibilities, was sort of a bowl head or bowl haircut shape woman with very, and the guy was too, a very large, just sort of disproportionate, large, chunky body, sort of, as I like to say, implausible inseams. But anyways, people got to choose where they sat, and then it provoked this whole conversation on sexism and identity politics that lasted for another hour and a half into the dinner.
Well, I think it's a fun story. I'm going to encourage people to get out on the Beltline, see Apparitions, Sherman's Eyes, and then go get together with some friends and have dinner and talk about it.
Sounds good.
And I thank you for joining us to talk about it.
Thanks, Gene.